This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com. Ted, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ted, you guys recently conducted a survey about what people are willing to talk about and feel a level of comfort in talking about, and also what they're very uncomfortable to talk about. And the results were really interesting to me. Tell us about it.
People are very uncomfortable discussing money matters. In fact, among the things we asked about, people are least comfortable discussing their bank account balances. And we're talking about with your family and close friends here. So bank account balances were the most taboo. Your love life was second. Credit card debt was third. So money was really well represented in that top three. Another way to look at it is that some of the things people were more comfortable talking about would be potentially sensitive topics like religion, politics, your weight. People would rather talk about that stuff than how much credit card debt they have.
I was surprised about political views as well, because that, you know, it's a very toxic environment today, right?
It is very surprising. It goes to show how personal money is for people. And, you know, I'm not saying you need to tell everybody all of your financial details, but especially people close to you, you know, your spouse, for example. We found that more than 4 in 10 people who are married or living with a romantic partner have kept or are keeping financial secrets from that person. And that includes secret debt, secret bank accounts, secret spending. That sort of thing is harmful to a relationship. We need to get better about talking about money. And with your friends, too. I mean, sometimes there can be friction if people have very different budgets and someone's suggesting expensive restaurants or trips or events, and that maybe doesn't mesh with the rest of the group. Holiday gifts. You know, part of the reason we do this survey around this time of year is because the holidays are coming up, and that can be an occasion for some awkward money conversations and gift-giving situations. For all of these reasons, I think it's better to get more open about discussing money.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, not really. I think what people will find is that there are probably more similarities amongst their close friends and family as it relates to their financial situation, right?
That brings up another good example with the holidays, which is sometimes it's hard to be the first one to speak up. But if money's tight this year, maybe you suggest to your family, could we only buy for the kids this year? Or could we pick a name out of a hat and buy for one adult rather than the whole extended clan? You know, these are some things that can get some heads nodding in agreement, that, you know, others may be feeling the same way. Half of credit card holders carry debt from month to month. The average credit card charges almost 21%. A lot of people are dealing with these kind of financial challenges. Same thing with your friend group. You know, when it comes to going out to expensive restaurants and other occasions, you know, sometimes that doesn't fit in the budget. Maybe you could suggest something else instead. We asked about regifting. Only 1 in 3 think regifting is appropriate. I was surprised by that. I mean, yeah, you want to be careful about not giving it back to the person who gave it to you, but I actually think regifting could be a suitable holiday saving strategy.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's the intention of the gift giver, right? I mean, but sometimes we get it wrong. My wife points that out to me all the time.
So, <you know. laughs> Unused gift cards are an example of this. Like, we recently did a study. We found almost half of Americans have unused gift cards. And among those people, the average amount is $244. I think wow. somebody would be none the wiser if you passed on a gift card, or you could buy merchandise using the card, and that's the holiday gift. The point here is finding ways to save, because money is tight. You know, inflation's still a big deal for people. Interest rates are still high. You know, the average holiday expense is $900, according to the National Retail Federation. So if you have $244 on average in gift cards just lying around, I say use them.
Ted, if we would, let's cover one thing that a lot of folks don't recognize. I mean, when you have this credit card debt and there's a minimum payment that's indicated on the statement that comes every month, what does that reflect, that minimum payment?
The typical formula is only 1% of the balance plus interest, and there's usually a floor. Maybe it can't go lower than $35 or something like that. But really, the point here is that minimum payments can keep you in debt for a really long time. Like, the average credit card balance, according to TransUnion, is about $6,300. The average interest rate is just shy of 21%. So if you use that scenario and you make minimum payments towards the average debt at the average rate, you're going to be in debt for about 18 years, and you're going to end up paying more than $9,000 in interest, plus that $6,300 that you charged in the first place. That's the danger of minimum payments. You know, it may keep you current in the eyes of the card issuer and the credit bureaus, but it's not enough. We'd love to see you pay in full every month. I realize that's not always possible. But then, you know, maybe get a 0% balance transfer card. Pause that interest clock for 21 months with a card like the Citi Simplicity or the Wells Fargo Reflect. Work with a reputable nonprofit credit counselor like Money Management International to knock your debt down. Take on a side hustle. Sell stuff you don't need. It's important to pull these different levers to lower that credit card debt burden.
A lot of folks have bank balances. They're probably earning definitely less than 4% on their money. When you figure out the difference, I mean, obviously you need to have a little bit of a rainy day fund, right? And you guys have a recommendation along those lines. But if you have dollars available, it just kind of makes sense to pay the balance down, right?
Yes. I mean, think of it as a guaranteed risk-free, tax-free return of whatever your interest rate is. Most credit cards are in the 20%+ range. I mean, we see some store cards as high as about 36%. So yes, it's important to have the rainy day fund, and you know, you want to be saving and investing for retirement. And I realize that life is expensive, and people say, well, I can't do it all. For a lot of people, the best answer is some of all the above. You know, maybe you're steadily building your emergency fund, but at the same time, you're paying down credit card debt. Sometimes there's a risk to over-saving or investing for the future. You know, not that I really would ever want to discourage that, but what I'm saying is, you know, if you're putting 15% of your salary into your retirement plan, but you're paying 25 or 30% on your credit cards, you might be a little upside down on that. Maybe it makes sense to contribute just enough to the 401k for the employer match, and then you put the additional funds towards the credit card debt, and then hopefully once you knock that out, then you can go back to turbocharging your investments. You know, same thing with savings. We want to have the rainy day fund, but you know, you have to balance that with expensive debt like credit card debt. Credit card debt is a lot more expensive and a lot more harmful than something like student loans or mortgages. I mean, just the rates are so much higher on credit card debt, and it's not doing anything for you. It's not building equity like a home. It's not furthering your earning power like a college education. Credit card debt is one that we want to knock out as soon as possible.
And you have to be disciplined, right? I was in a store not too long ago. There was a special offer if you use the store credit card and you apply for it. They give you 10% off, right, up to a certain amount. And I think in this case, it was up to $2,000. The purchase that I made was about $1,200. I took advantage of it, filled out the card. But I looked at the rate. The rate was like 29%. And, you know, so the first statement I got, I paid it off. But I got the benefit of the 10% discount on the goods. So made sense.
It's a smart strategy. Half of credit card holders typically pay in full every month. And for them, life is great. They get rewards, they get buyer protections, convenience. It's the other half that we worry about, those who are carrying debt, often for a long period of time. 6 in 10 people with credit card debt have had it for at least a year. And those store cards have especially high interest rates, in part because they're easier to get, but because they're not as selective about credit quality, they really bump those rates up. Whereas the average for all cards is about 21%, the average for store cards is about 30%. And you really do need to be careful with that, especially this holiday season. You may be offered one of these at the checkout counter. It only makes sense if you can pay in full and avoid these high interest rates.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bates.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other things that you guys talk about in your most recent publication is when you offer financial support to a family member or a friend, what folks' experience has been when they do that. Tell us about the results.
We found that half of Americans have lent money to family and friends or paid a group bill with the expectation of being paid back. And then among that group, 55% had something bad happen at least once. I mean, to be fair, it's not every time, but still, it only takes being stiffed once to make a big difference. 42% of these people lost money. 24% said the relationship was harmed. 9% had damage to their credit score. We really want to go into this with eyes wide open that it might not work out. And that's actually part of the advice. There's a temptation to say, well, just don't do it. You know, but I know that people want to be helpful. So if you're going to be helpful, maybe treat it like a gift rather than a loan and don't necessarily expect the money back. Or like they say on the airplane, put your oxygen mask on before helping others. Don't give so much help that it's harming your own financial security. I feel like any assistance you give, you have to be okay with not getting it back.
We're typically a very giving, you know, people here in the United States. So it kind of runs counter to a little bit of our psyche, but you have to put that in check because you really don't want to harm yourself financially.
And that's where it can come full circle. You know, you think about maybe parents of adult children offering assistance, but then if that leaves them unprepared for retirement, are they then going to come right back and ask the kids for a loan or support? I mean, maybe, and for some families, maybe that works. I do, though, wonder if there are other ways people could help. You know, could you offer advice or connections or, you know, in the case of that parent and adult child example, maybe you give assistance up to a certain point. You know, maybe the kid lives with you for the next 6 months or the next year, but you're working together on a plan for independence, you know, that you're trying to bank some of that savings and build that apartment fund or, you know, maybe there's some skin in the game with respect to the adult child contributing to household bills. Maybe the parent helps with some things but not others, and you're kind of gradually weaning them off the assistance. I feel like part of a parent's duty is to set their kids up for independence. So I do think there is such a thing as too much help if it crosses over into enabling bad habits. It's a tricky situation, though, because, you know, there's a fine line between being empathetic and nice and helpful versus, you know, maybe going a little too far. So everybody's line is going to be a little bit different. But I feel like the big thing is don't lend more than you can afford to lose and try not to hurt the relationship. You know, maybe it makes sense to just treat it like a gift and not necessarily expect it back or have it hanging over you.
Life rings aren't always a life ring, right? I mean, it depends on the individual circumstances.
there are some times that it can contribute to a failure to launch, and you know, maybe you're not encouraging your child or whomever we're talking about to be independent enough. So yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I know life's expensive for everybody, and but that's true on both sides of it, you know, because the person asking for the loan needs help, but the person giving the support may not always be in the best situation themselves. So, you know, it can also help maybe to get it in writing. I mean, not that you're going to sue your friend or family member, but, you know, maybe to at least clarify expectations that, you know, if you do want to do this and if you do hope to get paid back, maybe you're just very clear about those circumstances. Sometimes you hear like, oh, wait, you were expecting that money back? I mean, yeah, I was hoping to get that back. So it makes sense to just be as clear as you can. And it brings us back to the earlier point, too, just about being more comfortable talking about money in general, talking about it with your spouse so that you're not squirreling money away in secret or spending in secret. It helps to bring some of these conversations into the light. One bright spot is that Gen Zers seem more open about this than older adults, and especially on the issue of salary transparency. We are seeing some progress there.
That's good to hear. Let me ask you something, Ted. I've always been a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush kind of person, right?
Mm-hmm.
For folks that are thinking about refinancing maybe a home or their debt or whatever, and it absolutely makes sense right now, but there's financial information that's out there that's saying that rates are going to get cut again and, you know, possibly this and possibly that. What is y'all's best advice? Because I'm kind of like, those conditions are subject to change. And we've seen that just recently, right, with the most recent jobs report. Now there's uncertainty whether or not we'll get 50 basis point cut in the reserve, you know, Federal Reserve, or it will be a 25 basis point. It seems to me that if it makes sense for you right now and it's not a guaranteed thing that's going to happen, you might want to think twice about waiting and just go ahead and you know, get it done. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, mortgage rates have already fallen quite a bit, and this has been a real bright spot of late. I know the Fed just started cutting rates, but a lot of the move in mortgage rates came in advance because they track long-term treasuries and investors have been kind of reading these tea leaves that rates are going to come down. So a year ago, the average 30-year fixed mortgage rate hit 8% for the first time in more than 20 years. And now it's down to 6.2. So to your point about the bird in the hand, I mean, yeah, if you bought in the past couple of years and your rate was in the sevens or eights and now you can get one around six, that is guaranteed savings. And if rates fall further, you could always refinance again. I mean, I know there are transaction costs. But like I said, a lot of the drop has already been priced in. Many experts believe that a year from now, the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage could be somewhere in the mid to upper fives. So a little bit lower than it is now, but not dramatically lower. I mean, the big drop, the almost 2-point drop, we've really already seen since last fall. And same thing for prospective buyers. I mean, your dollar does stretch much further at 6% than it did at 8%. But just make sure you're not overextending. You know, sometimes people say that they're going to stretch and get into the house now, and then they're just going to, you know, refinance when rates fall. Just be a little careful about that, because what if rates don't fall as we hope and expect? Or what if you can't refinance for some reason? It's important to be able to afford the here and now. And if rates drop, I would treat that like a bonus, not a baseline expectation.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes you engage in risky strategies and that's what it's all about, is high risk. And, and with that, you know, you never know what the return's going to be for certain. Ted Rossman, as always, we really appreciate all the work that Bankrate does and you guys coming on and sharing it with us. And we hope that you have a great week. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst at Bankrate.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.